authoritative, serious, determined. Sonia was younger than Emily by what? 10 years, if I had to guess. But Sonia had fixed her cousin with a stare that made Emily look like a naughty child.
Emily, it's time to give this up. You have to tell her.
For God's sake, you have to tell John. You can't keep this buried anymore.
Emily looked up and met Sonia's eyes.
I can't tell. You know what will happen. I can't do that to her.
None of us know what will happen, said Sonia. But things will get worse if you don't take control now.
After a long moment, Emily finally looked away, staring at the floor. The sad, sad look on her face broke my heart. And not just mine.
Mom?
Asked Jill, voice trembling.
What's happening? This is all a big mix-up, right?
Emily sighed and looked up at her daughter.
No. You are Eric Dragomir's daughter. Rose is right.
John made a small, strangled sound but didn't interrupt his wife. She squeezed his hand again.
What I told you both over the years. It was true. Mostly. We did just have a brief relationship. Not a cheap one exactly, but brief.
She paused and glanced over at John this time, her expression softening.
I told you.
He nodded.
And I told you the past didn't matter to me. Never affected how I felt about you, about Jill. But I never imagined.
Me neither,
she agreed.
I didn't even know who he was when we first met. It was back when I lived in Las Vegas and had my first job, dancing in a show at the witching hour.
I felt my eyes go wide. No one seemed to notice. The witching hour. My friends and I had been to that casino while hunting for Robert, and a man there had made a joke about Lissa's father being interested in showgirls. I knew Emily worked in a Detroit ballet company now. It was why they lived in Michigan. Never would I have guessed that she started as a feather and sequin-clad dancer in a Las Vegas show. But why not? She would have had to start somewhere, and her tall, graceful frame would lend itself well to any type of dancing.
He was so sweet and so sad,
Emily continued.
His father had just died, and he'd come to sort of drown his sorrows. I understood how a death would devastate him. But now, well, I really understand. It was another loss to his family. The numbers were dropping.
She frowned thoughtfully and then shrugged.
He was a good man, and I think he truly loved his wife. But he was in a dark, low place. I don't think he was using me. He cared about me, though I doubt what happened between us would have in other circumstances. Anyway, I was fine with the way things ended and was content to move on with my life. Until Jill came along. I contacted Eric because I thought he should know, though I made it clear I didn't expect anything from him. And at that point, knowing who he was, I didn't want anything. If I'd let him, I think he would have acknowledged you, had a role in your life.
Emily's eyes were on Jill now.
But I've seen what that world is like. Court life is politics and lies and backstabbing. In the end, the only thing I'd accept from him was money. I still didn't want that. I didn't want to feel like I was blackmailing him. But I did want to make sure your future was secure.
I spoke without thinking. You don't really live like you're using that money. I regretted the words as soon as they were out. Their home was perfectly nice, hardly the depths of poverty. But it also didn't match the funds I'd seen moved around in those bank accounts.
I'm not, said Emily. It's on hand for emergencies, of course. But mostly I set it all aside for Jill, for her future, to do whatever she wants.
What do you mean?
Asked Jill, aghast.
What kind of money are you talking about?
You're an heiress, I said. And royalty.
I'm not any of those things,
she said. She was frantic now, looking around at all of us. She reminded me of a deer ready to bolt.
There's a mistake. You've all made some mistake.
Emily stood up and walked over to Jill's chair, kneeling on the floor before it. Emily clasped her daughter's hand.
It is all true. And I'm sorry you have to find out like this. But it doesn't change anything. Our lives aren't going to change. We'll go on just like we have before.
A range of emotions raced over Jill's features, especially fear and confusion. But she leaned down and buried her face against her mother's shoulder in acceptance.
Okay.
It was a touching moment, and again I almost felt like crying. I'd had my own share of family drama and parental issues. Like before, I wanted the Mastranas to have this moment. But they couldn't. You can't, I told them. You can't go on like before. Jill has to go to court. Emily jerked away from Jill and stared at me. Only a second ago, Emily had been full of grief and distress. Now, I saw intense anger and ferocity. Her blue eyes were stormy, fixing me with a sharp glare.
No! She is not going there! She is never going there!
Jill had already visited court before, but both Emily and I knew I wasn't referring to some casual sightseeing trip. Jill had to go with her true identity. Well, maybe true wasn't the right word. Illicit royalty wasn't part of her nature, at least not yet. She was who she'd always been, but her name had changed. That change had to be acknowledged, and the Moroi court would be shaken.
She has to, I urged. The court's getting corrupted, and the Dragomir family has to play its part to help fix things. Lyssa has no power alone, not without a family quorum. All the other royals, they're trampling her. They're going to push laws that won't help any of us.
Emily still knelt by the chair, as though shielding Jill from my words.
And that's exactly why Jill can't go. It's why I wouldn't let Eric acknowledge her. I don't want Jill involved. That place is poison. Tatiana's murder is proof.
Emily paused and gave me a sharp look, reminding me that I was the chief suspect. Apparently, we weren't past that yet.
All those royals, they're vicious. I don't want Jill turning into one of them. I won't let her turn into one of them.
Not all royals are like that, I argued.
Lyssa's not. She's trying to change the system.
Emily gave me a bitter smile.
And how do you think the others feel about her reform? I'm sure there are royals who are happy to see her silenced. Royals who wouldn't like to see her family reemerge. I told you, Eric was a good man. Sometimes I don't think it's a coincidence their family has died out.
I gaped.
That's ridiculous.
But I suddenly wasn't so sure.
Is it?
Emily's eyes were on me, as though guessing my doubts.
What do you think they'd do if another Dragomir came forward? The people who oppose Vasilisa? What do you think they'd do if only one person stood between them and her family's power?
Her implications were shocking. Yet, I knew they weren't impossible. Glancing over at Jill, I felt an empty, sinking feeling in my stomach. What would I be subjecting her to? Sweet, innocent Jill. Jill wanted adventure out of life and could still barely talk to guys without blushing. Her desire to learn to fight was half youthful impulse and half instinct to defend her people. Stepping into the royal world could technically help her people too, though not in a way she'd ever expected. And it would mean getting involved with the dark and sinister nature that sometimes filled the court. Emily seemed to read my silence as agreement. A mix of triumph and relief crossed her face, all of which vanished when Jill suddenly spoke up.
"I'll do it."
We all turned to stare. Thus far, I'd been regarding her with pity, thinking of her as a victim. Now I was startled at how brave and resolved she looked. Her expression was still underscored with a little fear and shock, but there was a steel in her I'd never seen before.
"What?"
exclaimed Emily.
"I'll do it," said Jill, voice steadier. "I'll help Lyssa and the Dragomirs. I'll go with Rose back to court."
I decided mentioning the myriad difficulties of me getting anywhere near court wasn't important just then. Honestly, I had reached a point where I was playing all of this by ear, though it was a relief to see Emily's fury shifted away from me.
"You will not! I'm not letting you near there!"
"You can't make this choice for me," cried Jill. "I'm not a child."
"And you're certainly not an adult," retorted Emily.
The two began arguing back and forth, and soon John jumped in to support his wife. In the midst of the family bickering, Sydney leaned toward me and murmured,
"I bet you never thought the hardest part of finding your savior would be getting her mom to let her stay out past curfew."
The unfortunate part about her joke was that it was kind of true. We needed Jill, and I certainly hadn't envisioned this complication. What if Emily refused? Clearly, keeping Jill's heritage a secret was something she'd been pretty adamant about for a while. Say, like, 15 years. I had a feeling Jill wouldn't be beyond running away to court if it came down to that. And I wouldn't be beyond helping her. Once more, Sonia jumped into the conversation unexpectedly.
"Emily, didn't you hear me? This is all going to happen eventually, with or without your consent. If you don't let Jill go now, she'll go next week, or next year, or in 5 years. The point is, it will happen."
Emily sank back against the chair, face crumpling.
"No, I don't want this."
Sonia's pretty face turned bitter.
"Life, unfortunately, doesn't seem to care what we want. Act now while you can actually stop it from being a disaster."
"Please, Mom,"
begged Jill. Her jade, Dragomir eyes regarded Emily with affection. I knew Jill might indeed disobey and run off, but she didn't want to, not if she didn't have to. Emily stared into the distance, long-lashed eyes vacant and defeated. And although she was standing in the way of my plans, I knew she did it out of legitimate love and concern, traits that had probably drawn Eric to her.
"Okay,"
said Emily at last. She sighed.
"Jill can go, but I'm going too. You aren't facing that place without me."
"Or me,"
said John. He still seemed bewildered, but was determined to support his wife and stepdaughter. Jill regarded them both with gratitude, reminding me again that I'd just turned a functional family dysfunctional. Emily and John coming with us hadn't been part of my plans, but I couldn't blame them and didn't see what harm they'd cause. We'd need Emily anyway to tell everyone about Eric.
"Thank you," I said. "Thank you so much."
John eyed me.
"We still haven't dealt with the fact that there's a fugitive in our home."
"Rose didn't do it!"
That fierceness was still in Jill.
"It was a setup!"
"It was." I hesitated to speak my next words. "Probably by the people opposing Lyssa." Emily paled, but I felt the need for honesty, even if it reaffirmed her fears. She took a steadying breath.
"I believe you. Believe that you didn't do it. I don't know why, but I do."
She almost smiled.
"No, I do know why. It's because of what I said before. About those vipers at court. They're the ones who do this kind of thing. Not you.
Are you sure? Asked John uneasily. This mess with Jill is bad enough without us housing a criminal.
I'm certain, said Emily. Sonia and Jill trust Rose, and so I do. You're all welcome to stay here tonight, since we can hardly head out to court right now.
I opened my mouth to say we most certainly could leave right now, but Sydney elbowed me sharply. Thank you, Mrs. Mastrano, she said, summoning up that alchemist diplomacy. That would be great. I repressed a scowl. Time was still pressing on me, but I knew the Mastranos were entitled to make some preparations. It was probably better to travel in the daytime, too. A rough check of my mental map made me think we could do the whole drive back to court in one day. I nodded in agreement with Sydney, resigning myself to a sleepover at the Mastrano house. Thanks. We'd appreciate it. Suddenly, something occurred to me, summoning back John's words. This mess with Jill is bad enough without us housing a criminal. I gave Emily as convincing and reassuring a smile as I could muster. We, also have some friends with us waiting out in the car. Chapter 24. Considering their earlier antagonism, I was a bit surprised to see Sonia and Robert combine their power to create an illusion for the Dashkov brothers. It obscured their appearances, and with the addition of some fake names, the Mastrano family just assumed the guys were part of our increasingly bizarre entourage. Considering the distress and upheaval already going on in the house, a couple more people seemed the least of the Mastrano's worries. In playing good Maroi hosts, it wasn't enough to just cook up dinner. Emily also managed to get a feeder to come by, a sort of blood delivery service. Normally, Maroi, who lived outside sheltered areas and intermingled among humans, had access to secret feeders living nearby. Usually, these feeders had a keeper of sorts, a Maroi who made money off the service. It was common for Maroi to simply show up at the home of the feeder's owner, but in this case, Emily had made arrangements for the feeder to be brought to her house. She was doing it as a courtesy, the kind she'd do for any Maroi guests, even ones who were delivering news she'd dreaded receiving for most of her life. Little did she know just how desperately welcome blood was to the Maroi we'd brought along. I didn't mind the brothers suffering a little weakness, but Sonia definitely needed blood if she was going to continue her recovery. Indeed, when the feeder and her keeper showed, Sonia was the first to drink. Dimitri and I had to stay out of sight upstairs. Sonia and Robert could only manage so much spirit illusion, and hiding Robert and Victor's identities from the feeder's Maroi was imperative. Obscuring both me and Dimitri would have been too much, and considering our most wanted status, it was essential we not take any risks. Leaving the brothers unsupervised made Dimitri and me nervous, but the two of them seemed too desperate for blood to attempt anything. Dimitri and I wanted to clean up anyways, since we hadn't had time for showers this morning. We flipped a coin, and I got to go first. Only when I finished and was rummaging through my clothes, I discovered I'd gone through my clean, casual wear supply and was down to the dress Sydney had included in the backpack. I grimaced, but figured it wouldn't hurt to put the dress on for one night. We wouldn't be doing much more than waiting around for tomorrow's departure, and maybe Emily would let me do laundry before we left. After decent hair styling with a blow dryer, I finally felt civilized again. Sydney and I had been given a guest room to share, and the brothers occupied another. Sonia was going to stay in Jill's room, and Dimitri had been offered the couch. I didn't doubt for a second he'd be stalking the halls as the household slept, and that I'd be trading shifts with him. For now, he was still showering, and I crept out into the hall and peered down over a railing to check out the first floor. The Mastranos, Sonia, and the brothers were all gathered with the feeder and her keeper. Nothing seemed amiss. Relieved, I returned to my room and used the downtime to check on Lissa. After the initial excitement of passing her test,
I'd felt her calm down and had assumed she was getting much-needed sleep.
But no, she hadn't gone to bed. She'd taken Eddie and Christian over to Adrian's, and I realized she was the one who'd woken him up from the dream I'd shared with him in the car. A skimming of her recent memories gave me a replay of what had happened since the time he left me and staggered to his door.
"What's going on?"
he asked, looking from face to face.
"I was having a good dream."
"I need you," said Lyssa.
"I hear that from women a lot,"
said Adrian. Christian made a gagging sound, but the faintest glimmer of a smile crossed Eddie's lips, despite his otherwise tough guardian stance.
"I'm serious," she told him. "I just got a message from Ambrose. He's got something important to tell us, and I don't know, I'm still not certain of his role in everything. I want another set of eyes on him. I want your opinion."
"That,"
Adrian said,
"is not something I hear a lot." "Just hurry up and get dressed, okay?"
ordered Christian. Honestly, it was a wonder anyone slept anymore, considering how often we were all pulled out of sleep. Adrian, nonetheless, did dress quickly, and despite his flippant comments, I knew he was interested in anything related to clearing my name. What I was uncertain of was whether he'd tell anyone about the mess I'd gotten myself into, now that I'd slipped and revealed some of my true activities. My friends hurried over to the building they'd visited before, the one where Ambrose lived and worked. The court had woken up, and people were out and about, many undoubtedly wanting to find out about the second monarch test. In fact, a few people catching sight of Lyssa called out happy greetings.
"I had another trial tonight," Lyssa told Adrian.
Someone had just congratulated her.
"An unexpected one."
Adrian hesitated, and I waited for him to say he'd already heard that from me. I also waited for him to deliver the shocking news about my current company and whereabouts.
"How'd it go?"
he asked instead.
"I passed," she replied. "That's all that matters."
She couldn't bring herself to tell him about the cheering people, those who didn't just simply support her because of the law, but because they actually believed in her. Tasha, Mia, and some surprise friends from school had been among the onlookers, grinning at her. Even Daniela, there to wait for Rufus's turn, had grudgingly congratulated Lyssa, seeming surprised Lyssa had made it through. The whole experience had been surreal, and Lyssa had simply wanted to get out of there. Eddie had gotten pulled away to assist other guardians, despite his protests that he was Lyssa's escort. So, Christian and Tasha had ended up having to take Lyssa home alone. Well, almost alone. A guardian named Ethan Moore joined them, the one Abe had teased Tasha about. Abe exaggerated some things, but he'd been right this time. Ethan looked as tough as any guardian, but his kick-ass attitude occasionally faltered whenever he looked at Tasha. He adored her. She clearly liked him too, and flirted along the way, much to Christian's discomfort. I thought it was cute. Some guys probably wouldn't go near Tasha because of her scars. It was nice to see someone who appreciated her for her character, no matter how disgusted Christian was by the thought of anyone dating his aunt. And I actually kind of liked seeing Christian so obviously tormented. It was good for him. Ethan and Tasha left once Lyssa was securely back in her room. Within minutes, Eddie showed back up, grumbling about how they delayed him with some crap task when they knew he had better things to do. He'd apparently made such a fuss that they'd finally released him so he could hurry back to Lyssa's side. He made it just 10 minutes before Ambrose's note arrived, which was lucky timing. Eddie would have freaked out if he'd come to her room and found her gone. He would have thought Strigoi had kidnapped his charge in his absence. That was the series of events leading up to what was happening now. Lyssa and the three guys going off to Ambrose's secret meeting.
"You're early,"
he said, letting them in before Lyssa could even knock a second time. They stood inside Ambrose's own room now, not a fancy parlor for clients. It resembled a dorm room, a very nice one, much nicer than anything I'd endured. Liz's attention was all on Ambrose, so she didn't notice, out of the corner of her eye, Eddie quickly scanning the room. I was glad he was on his game and guessed he didn't trust Ambrose, or anyone not in our immediate circle.
"What's going on?" asked Lissa as soon as Ambrose shut the door. "Why the urgent visit?"
"Because I have to show you something," he said.
On his bed was a pile of papers, and he took the top one.
"Remember when I said they were locking off Tatiana's belongings? Well, now they're inventorying and removing them."
Adrian shifted uncomfortably. Again, only something I noticed.
"She had a safe where she kept important documents. Secret ones, obviously. And..."
"And?"
prompted Lissa.
"And I didn't want anyone to find them," Ambrose continued. "I didn't know what most of them were, but if she wanted them secret, I just felt they should stay that way. I knew the combination, and so... I stole them."
Guilt shone on his face, but it wasn't murderous guilt. It was guilt for the theft. Lissa eyed the stack eagerly.
"And?"
"None of them have anything to do with what you're looking for. Except maybe this one."
He handed her the piece of paper. Adrian and Christian crowded around her. "Darling Tatiana, I'm a bit surprised to see how these latest developments have unfolded. I thought we had an understanding that the safety of our people required more than just bringing in a younger crop of guardians. We have let too many of them go to waste, particularly the women. If you took actions to force them back, and you know what I'm talking about, the guardian ranks would swell. This current law is completely inadequate, particularly after seeing how your training experiment failed. I'm equally shocked to hear that you are considering releasing Dmitry Belikov from his guards. I don't understand exactly what happened, but you cannot trust mere appearances. You may be unleashing a monster, or at the very least, a spy in our midst, and he needs to be under much stricter guard than he currently is. In fact, your continued support of the study of spirit is troubling altogether, and no doubt led to this unnatural situation. I believe there is a reason this element was lost to us for so long. Our ancestors realized its danger and stamped it out. Avery Lazar stands as proof of that, and your prodigy, Vasilisa Dragomir, is certain to follow. In encouraging Vasilisa, you encourage the degradation of the Dragomir line. A line that should be allowed to fade into history with honor and not the disgrace of insanity. Your support of her may also put your own great-nephew at risk, something neither of us would like to see happen. I'm sorry to burden you with so much condemnation. I hold you in the highest regard and have nothing but respect for the way you have so skillfully governed our people these long years. I'm certain you will soon come to the appropriate decisions, though I worry others may not share my confidence in you. Said people might attempt to take matters into their own hands, and I fear for what may follow." The letter was typed with no signature. For a moment, Lissa couldn't process it as a whole. She was completely consumed by the part about the Dragomir line fading into disgrace. It hit too close to the vision she'd seen in the test. It was Christian who pulled her back.
"Well, it would seem Tatiana had enemies, but I guess that's kind of obvious at this point in the game." "Who's this from?"
demanded Adrian. His face was dark, furious at this thinly veiled threat to his aunt.
"I don't know," said Ambrose. "This is exactly the way I found it. Maybe she didn't even know who the sender was."
Lissa nodded her agreement.
"There's certainly an anonymous feel to it. And yet, at the same time, I feel like it's someone Tatiana must have known well."
Adrian gave Ambrose a suspicious look.
"How do we know you didn't just type this yourself to throw us off?"
"Adrian," chastised Lissa.
She didn't say it, but was hoping to urge Adrian to feel out Ambrose's aura for anything she might not be able to detect.
"This is crazy,"
said Christian, tapping the piece of paper.
The part about rounding up Dompierres and forcing them to be guardians? What do you think that means? The actions that Tatiana knows about?
I knew because I'd been tipped off about a lot of this earlier. Compulsion, Tatiana's note had said.
I'm not sure, said Lyssa.
She reread the letter to herself.
What about the experiments part? Do you think that's the training sessions Grant did with Maroi?
That was what I thought, said Ambrose. But I'm not sure.
Can we see the rest?
Asked Adrian, gesturing to the stack of papers. I couldn't tell if his suspicion was legitimate distrust of Ambrose or just the result of how upset his aunt's murder made him. Ambrose handed over the papers, but after going through the pages, Lyssa agreed. There was nothing of use in them. The documents mostly consisted of legalese and personal correspondence. It occurred to Lyssa, as it had to me, that Ambrose might not be showing everything he'd found. There was no way to prove that for now. Stifling a yawn, she thanked him and left with the others. She was hoping for sleep, but her mind couldn't help but analyze the letter's possibilities. If it was legitimate.
That letter's evidence that someone had a lot more reason to be pissed off at Tatiana than Rose did,
observed Christian as they wound their way back upstairs toward the building's exit.
Aunt Tasha once said that anger based on calculated reason is more dangerous than anger based on blind hate. Your aunt's a regular philosopher, said Adrian wearily. But everything we've got is still circumstantial.
Ambrose had let Lyssa keep the letter, and she'd folded it and put it in her jeans pocket.
I'm curious what Tasha will have to say about this, and Abe, too.
She sighed.
I wish Grant was still alive. He was a good man, and might have some insight into this.
They reached a side exit on the main floor, and Eddie pushed the door open for them. Christian glanced over at Lyssa as they stepped outside.
How close were Grant and Serena?
Eddie moved a fraction of a second before Lyssa saw the problem. But of course, Eddie would have already been watching for problems. A man, a Maroi actually, had been waiting among trees in the courtyard that separated Ambrose's building from the neighboring one. It wasn't exactly a secluded spot, but it was far enough off of the main paths that it often stayed deserted. The man moved forward and looked startled when he saw Eddie racing toward him. I was able to analyze the fight in a way Lyssa couldn't. Judging by the man's angle and movement, he'd been heading for Lyssa, with a knife in his hand. Lyssa froze in fear, an expected reaction for someone not trained to react in this situation. But when Christian jerked her back, she came to life and quickly retreated with him and Adrian. The attacker and Eddie were deadlocked for a moment, each trying to take the other down. I heard Lyssa yell for help, but my attention was all on the fighters. The guy was strong for a Maroi, and his maneuvers suggested he'd been trained to fight. I doubted, however, that he'd been trained since elementary school, nor did he have the muscle a Dompierre did. Sure enough, Eddie broke through and forced the guy to the ground. Eddie reached out to pin the man's right hand and get the knife out of the equation. Maroi or not, the man was actually quite skilled with the blade, particularly when I, and probably Eddie too, noticed scarring and what looked like a bent finger on his left hand. The guy had probably gone to great extents to hone his knife hand's reflexes. Even restrained, he was still able to sneak up with the blade, aiming unhesitantly for Eddie's neck. Eddie was too fast to let that happen and blocked the blow with his arm, which took the blade's cut. Eddie's block gave the Maroi a bit more room to move, and he bucked up, throwing Eddie off. Without missing a beat, really, this guy was impressive, the Maroi swung for Eddie again. There could be no doubt about the man's intentions. He wasn't holding back. He was there to kill. That blade was out for blood. Guardians knew how to subdue and take prisoners. But we'd also been trained that when things were moving too fast, when it was an us or them situation, well, we made sure it was them. Eddie was faster than his opponent and was being driven by instincts pounded into us for years. Stop what was trying to kill you. Eddie had no gun or knife. Not at court. When the man came at him a second time, knife again pointed straight at Eddie's neck, Eddie used the only weapon left that he could be sure would save his life. Eddie staked the Maroi. Dimitri had once jokingly commented that you didn't have to be Strigoi to be hurt by a stake through your heart. And let's face it, a stake through the heart didn't actually hurt. It killed. Tatiana was proof. The man's knife actually made contact with Eddie's neck, and then fell before piercing skin. The man's eyes went wide in shock and pain, and then saw nothing at all. He was dead. Eddie leaned back on his heels, staring at his victim with the adrenaline-charged battle lust that followed any situation. Shouting suddenly caught his attention, and he leapt to his feet, ready for the next threat. What he found was a group of guardians, ones who had responded to Lissa's earlier cries for help. They took one look at the scene and immediately acted on the conclusions their training drove them to. There was a dead Maroi and someone holding a bloody weapon. The guardians went for Eddie, throwing him against the wall and prying his stake away. Lissa shouted at them that they had it all wrong, that Eddie had saved her life and...
Rose!
Dimitri's frantic voice shocked me back to the Mastrano house. I was sitting on the bed, and he knelt before me, face full of fear as he gripped my shoulders.
Rose, what's wrong? Are you okay?
No! I pushed him aside and moved toward the door. I have to go back to court! Now! Lissa's in danger! She needs me!
Rose! Rosa! Slow down!
He'd caught hold of my arm, and there was no escaping from that grip. He turned me so I faced him. His hair was still damp from the shower, and the clean scent of soap and wet skin surrounded us.
Tell me what happened.
I quickly repeated what I'd seen.
Someone tried to kill her, Dimitri, and I wasn't there!
But Eddie was, said Dimitri quietly. She's okay. She's alive.
He released me, and I leaned wearily against the wall. My heart was racing, and even though my friends were safe, I couldn't shake my panic.
And now he's in trouble. Those guardians were pissed.
Only because they don't know the whole story. They see a dead body and a weapon. That's it. Once they get facts and testimonies, everything will be okay. Eddie saved the Maroi. It's his job.
But he killed another Maroi to do it, I pointed out. We're not supposed to do that.
It sounded like an obvious and even stupid statement, but I knew Dimitri understood what I meant. The Guardian's purpose was to protect Maroi. They come first. Killing one was unimaginable, but then so was them trying to kill each other.
This wasn't a normal situation, Dimitri affirmed.
I tipped my head back. I know.
I just can't stand leaving her undefended. I want so badly to go back and keep her safe. Right now.
Tomorrow seemed years away.
What if it happens again?
Other people are there to protect her.
Dimitri walked over to me, and I was surprised to see a smile on his lips, in light of the grim events.
Believe me, I want to protect her too. But we'd risk our lives for nothing if we take off right now. Wait a little longer, and at least risk your life for something important.
A little of the panic faded. And Jill is important, isn't she?
Very.
I straightened up. Part of my brain kept trying to calm me about Lissa's attack while the other fully processed what we'd accomplished here.
We did it, I said, feeling a smile slowly spread to my own lips. Against all reason, somehow we found Lissa's lost sister. Do you realize what this means? Lissa can have everything she's entitled to now. They can't deny her anything. Hell, she could be queen if she wanted. And Jill...
I hesitated.
Well, she's part of an ancient royal family. That's gotta be a good thing, right?
I think it depends on Jill, said Dimitri, and what the after effects of all this are.
Guilt over potentially ruining Jill's life returned, and I stared down at my feet.
Hey, it's okay, he said, tilting my chin back up.
His brown eyes were warm and affectionate.
You did the right thing. No one else would have tried something this impossible. Only Rose Hathaway. You took a gamble to find you. You risked your life by breaking Abe's rules. And it paid off. It was worth it.
I hope Adrian thinks so, I mused. He thinks me leaving our safe house was the stupidest thing ever. Dimitri's hand dropped.
You told him about all this?
Not about Jill, but I accidentally told him we weren't in West Virginia anymore. He's kept it secret, though, I added hastily. No one else knows.
I can believe that,
said Dimitri, though he'd lost some of his earlier warmth. It was such a fleeting thing.
He seems pretty loyal to you.
He is. I trust him completely.
And he makes you happy?
Dimitri's tone wasn't harsh, but there was an intensity to it that put the exchange on par with a police interrogation. I thought about my time with Adrian. The bantering, the parties, the games, and of course the kissing. Yeah, he does. I have fun with him. I mean, he's infuriating sometimes. Okay, a lot of the time. But don't be fooled by all the vices. He's not a bad person.
I know he isn't, said Dimitri. He's a good man. It's not easy for everyone to see, but I can. He's still getting himself together, but he's on his way. I saw it in the escape, and after...
The words caught on Dimitri's tongue.
After Siberia. He was there for you? He helped you?
I nodded, puzzled by all these questions. Turns out they were only the warm-up for the big one.
Do you love him?
There are only a few people in the world who could ask me such insanely personal questions without getting punched. Dimitri was one of them. With us, there were no walls, but our complicated relationship made this topic surreal. How could I describe loving someone else to a man I'd once loved? A man you still love, a voice whispered inside my head. Maybe. Probably. Again, I reminded myself that it was natural to carry lingering feelings for Dimitri. They would fade. They had to fade. Just like his had. He was the past. Adrian was my future. Yeah, I said, taking longer than I probably should have. I do love him.
Good. I'm glad.
The thing was, Dimitri's face didn't look all that glad as he stared blankly out the window. My confusion grew. Why was he upset? His actions and words no longer seemed to match lately. I approached him. What's wrong?
Nothing. I just want to make sure that you're okay. That you're happy.
He turned back to me, putting on a forced smile. He'd spoken the truth, but not the whole truth.
Things have been changing, that's all. It's making me reconsider so much. Ever since Donovan. And then Sonia. It's strange. I thought it all changed the night Lisa saved me. But it didn't. There's been so much more. More to the healing than I realized.
He started to slip into pensive mode, but caught himself.
Every day I figure out something new. Some new emotion I'd forgotten to feel. Some revelation I totally missed. Some beauty I didn't see.
Hey, my hair in the alley does not go on that list, okay? I teased. You were in shock. The forced smile grew natural.
No, Rosa. It was beautiful. It's beautiful now.
The dress is just throwing you off, I said, attempting a joke. In reality, I felt dizzy under his gaze. Those dark, dark eyes looked at me. Really looked at me, I think, for the first time since he'd entered the room. A mixed expression came over him that made no sense to me. I could pick out the emotions it contained, but not what caused them. Awe, wonder, sadness, regret. What? I asked uneasily. Why are you looking at me like that? He shook his head, the smile rueful now.
Because sometimes a person can get so caught up in the details that they miss the whole. It's not just the dress or the hair. It's you. You're beautiful. So beautiful it hurts me.
I felt a strange fluttering sensation in my chest. Butterflies. Cardiac arrest. It was hard to say what exactly. Yet in that moment, I was no longer standing in the Mastrano guest room. He'd said those words before, or something very close. So beautiful it hurts me. It was back in the cabin at St. Vladimir's, the one and only time we'd had sex. He'd looked at me in a very similar way, too, only there'd been less sadness. Nonetheless, as I heard those words again, a door I'd kept locked in my heart suddenly burst open. And with it came all the feelings and experiences and sense of oneness we'd always shared. Looking at him, just for the space of a heartbeat, I had a surreal sensation wash over me, like I'd known him forever. Like we were bound, but not in the way Lissa and I were, by a bond forced on us.
Hey guys, have you... Oh...
Sydney came to a halt in the half-open doorway and promptly took two steps back.
Sorry, I... that is...
Dimitri and I immediately pulled back from each other. I felt warm and shaky and only then noticed how close we had been. I didn't even remember moving, but only a breath had separated us. What had happened? It was like a trance. A dream. I swallowed and tried to slow my pulse.
No problem. What's going on?
Sydney glanced between us, still looking uncomfortable. Her dating life might be non-existent, but even she knew what she'd walked in on. I was glad one of us did.
I just wanted to come hang out. I can't handle that going on downstairs.
I attempted a smile, still utterly confused by my feelings. Why did Dimitri look at me like that? Why did he say that? He can't still want me. He said he didn't. He told me to leave him alone.
Sure. We were just... talking, I said.
She obviously didn't believe me. I tried harder to convince her, and myself.
We were talking about Jill. Do you have any ideas on how to get her to court, seeing as we're all outlaws?
Sydney might not be an expert in personal relationships, but puzzles were familiar territory. She relaxed, her attention focusing inward as she tried to figure our problem out.
Well, you could always have her mother...
A loud crashing from downstairs abruptly cut her off. As one, Dimitri and I sprang for the door, ready to combat whatever mess Victor and Robert had caused. We both came screeching to a halt at the top of the stairs when we heard lots of shouts for everyone to get down.
Guardians, Dimitri said. There are guardians raiding the house.
Chapter 25. We could already hear footsteps thundering through the house and knew we were seconds from the army downstairs heading up to the second floor. The three of us backed away, and to my surprise, it was Sydney who reacted first.
Get out! I'll distract them!
Her distracting them would probably just mean momentarily blocking their way until they pushed her aside. But those extra seconds could make a huge difference. Still, I couldn't stand the thought of abandoning her. Dimitri had no such reservations, particularly when we heard feet on the stairs.
Come on! He shouted, grabbing hold of my arm.
We raced down the hall to the farthest bedroom, Victor and Roberts. Just before we entered, I yelled back to Sydney.
Get Jill to court!
I don't know if she heard, because by the sounds of it, the guardians had reached her. Dimitri immediately opened the room's one large window and looked at me knowingly. As always, we needed no vocal communication. He jumped out first,
no doubt wanting to take the full brunt of whatever danger waited below. I immediately followed. I dropped onto the first floor's roof, slid down it, and then made the longer drop to the ground. Dimitri caught part of my arm, studying my landing, but not before one of my ankles twisted slightly in on itself. It was the same one that had taken the brunt of the fall outside Donovan's, and I winced as pain shot through me, pain I then promptly ignored. Dark figures moved toward us, emerging from evening shadows in hidden spots around the backyard. Of course. Guardians wouldn't just come busting down a door. They'd also have the place staked out. With our natural rhythm, Dimitri and I fought back to back against our attackers. Like usual, it was hard to incapacitate our foes without killing them. Hard, but necessary if we could manage it. I didn't want to kill my own people, people who were just doing their job to apprehend fugitives. The long dress didn't do me any favors either. My legs kept getting caught in the fabric.
The others will be out any minute,
Dimitri grunted, slamming a guardian to the ground.
We need to move. There, that gate.
I couldn't respond but followed his lead as we made our way to a door in the fence while still defending ourselves. We'd just taken out the backyard squad when more spilled from the house. We slipped through the gate, emerging onto a quiet side road flanking the Mastrano house, and ran. It soon became clear, however, that I couldn't keep up with Dimitri. My mind could ignore the pain, but my body couldn't make my injured ankle work properly. Without missing a beat, Dimitri slid his arm around me, helping me run and take the weight off the ankle. We turned off the road, cutting through yards that would make it more difficult, but not impossible, for them to track us.
We can't outrun them, I said. I'm slowing us down. You need to—
Do not say leave you, he interrupted. We're doing this together.
Snick, snick! A flower pot near us suddenly exploded into a pile of dirt and clay.
They're shooting at us, I said incredulously. They're actually shooting at us!
With so much hand-to-hand training, I always felt like guns were cheating. But when it came to hunting down a queen-killing murderer and her accomplice, honor wasn't the issue. Results were. Another bullet zinged by, dangerously close.
With the silencer, said Dimitri. Even so, they'll be cautious. They don't want the neighborhood thinking it's under attack. We need to cover. Fast.
We might have been literally dodging bullets, but my ankle wouldn't last much longer. He made another sharp turn, completely immersing us in suburban backyards. I couldn't look behind us, but I heard shouting voices that let me know we weren't free yet.
There, said Dimitri.
Ahead of us was a dark house with a large glass patio reminiscent of Sonia's. The glass door was open, though a screen blocked the way inside. Dimitri tugged on its latch. Locked. But a screen was hardly a deterrent for us. Poor, trusting family. He took out his stake and slashed a long vertical line that we hastily slipped through. Immediately, he jerked me to the side, out of view. He put a finger to his lips, holding me close to his body. Seconds later, we saw guardians coming through and searching the yards. Some kept moving on in case we'd run further. Others lingered, investigating places that made good hiding spots as the evening grew darker and darker. I glanced at the screen. The cut had been clean, not an obvious hole, but it was still something our pursuers might notice. Sensing this as well, Dimitri carefully moved off into the living room, doing his best to avoid windows and keep out of sight. We cut through to the kitchen and found a door leading to the garage. In the garage was a red Ford Mustang.
Two-car family, he murmured. I was hoping for that.
Or they're out for a walk and about to come home when they notice a SWAT team in their neighborhood, I whispered.
The guardians won't let themselves be seen.
We began searching for obvious key locations. At last, I found a set hanging on the side of a cupboard and scooped them up.
Got him,
I said. Since I had the keys, I think Dimitri actually would have let me jump into the driver's seat. Thanks to my right ankle, however, I had to toss him the keys. The universe had a sick sense of humor.
Will they spot us in this?
I asked as Dimitri opened the garage door and backed out.
It's, a bit flashier than our usual stolen car profile.
It was also awesome. Sydney, car geek that she was, would have loved it.
I bit my lip, still guilty that we'd left her behind. I tried to push the thought out of my head for now.
It is, agreed Dimitri. But other cars will be driving down the street. Some guardians will still be searching the yards, and some will be guarding the Mastranos. They don't have infinite numbers. They can't watch everything at once, though they'll certainly try.
I held my breath anyway as we drove out of the subdivision. Twice, I thought I spotted stealthy figures by the side of the road. But Dimitri was right. They couldn't check every car in a busy suburban neighborhood. The darkness also obscured our faces. Dimitri remembered the way we'd driven in because a few turns later, we were merging onto the freeway. I knew he had no destination in mind, except for away. With no obvious indications that we'd been followed, I shifted my body and stretched out my throbbing leg. My chest had that light, nebulous feeling you got when too much adrenaline was pumping through you.
They turned us in, didn't they?
I asked. Victor and Robert called us in and then took off.
I should have kept watch.
I don't know, Dimitri said. It's possible. I saw them just before I talked to you, and everything seemed fine. They wanted to go with us to find Jill, but they knew it was only a matter of time before we turned them over to the authorities. I'm not surprised they came up with an escape plan. They could have used the feeding as a distraction to call the guardians and get rid of us.
Crap. I sighed and pushed my hair back, wishing I had a ponytail holder.
We should have gotten rid of them when we had the chance.
What'll happen now? Dimitri was silent for a few seconds.
The Mastranos will be questioned. Extensively. Well, all of them will, really. They'll lock Sonya up for investigation like me. And Sydney will be shipped back to the alchemists.
And what will they do to her?
I don't know. But I'm guessing her helping vampire fugitives won't go over well with our superiors.
Crap, I repeated.
Everything had fallen apart.
And what are we going to do?
Put some distance between us and those guardians. Hide somewhere. Wrap up your ankle.
I gave him a sidelong look.
Wow, you've got everything planned out.
Not really,
he said, a small frown on his face.
That's the easy stuff. What happens after that is going to be the hard part.
My heart sank. He was right. Provided the Mastranos weren't indicted by Moroi authorities for helping criminals, Emily now had no one forcing her to acknowledge Jill's heritage. If Sydney was being hauled back to her own people, well, she couldn't help either. I was going to have to tell someone else, I realized. The next time I made contact with Adrian, I'd have to divulge the truth so that my friends could do something about Jill. We couldn't sit on this secret any longer. Dimitri took the next exit, and I tuned back into the world.
Hotel?
I asked.
Not quite, he said.
We were in a busy commercial area not far from Ann Arbor, I thought. One of the Detroit suburbs. Restaurants and stores lined the road, and he turned us toward a 24-hour superstore that promised to carry everything. He parked and opened his door.
Stay here.
But... Dimitri looked meaningfully at me, and I glanced down. I'd come away from our fight more scuffed up than I realized. And the dress had torn. My ragged appearance would attract attention. As would my limping. I nodded, and he left. I spent the time turning over our problems, cursing myself for not having found a way to turn in the brothers once Robert had restored Sonya. I'd been bracing myself for betrayal in the form of some magical attack. I hadn't expected something as simple as a call to the guardians. Dimitri, ever the efficient shopper, returned soon with two large bags and something slung over his shoulder. He tossed it all in the back seat, and I peered back curiously.
What's that?
It was long and cylindrical, covered in canvas.
A tent.
Why are we...
I groaned.
No hotel, huh? We'll be harder to find at the campground. The car will especially be harder to find. We can't get rid of it quite yet. Not with your foot.
Those poor people, I said. I hope their car insurance covers that.